Welcome, everyone, to the Women Excelling Everywhere podcast, formerly the Women Entrepreneurs Extraordinaire podcast. But we are talking to women who are excelling everywhere. So we want to be sure to be more inclusive that way and just highlight amazing, wonderful individuals like our guest today, Ms. Dana Frank. Dana, thank you so much for being on the We podcast.
Thank you, Julie. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I am going to go ahead for the audience. I'm going to read. I'm going to put my glasses on. And I'm going to read a little bit of your professional bio, and then we'll get down to the real Dana. So Dana Frank owns and manages a portfolio of multifamily properties in Greater Seattle. She is a blogger at menopausebarbies. I love that.com. She serves on philanthropic boards and is an influential Seattleite. Her witty, hilarious, and ultra-positive personality shines brightly as she works to support and motivate at-risk youths, rising stars in the community, and collaborate for change in the political spectrum. 25 years ago, Dana took the reins of the general managing partner of the company now known as TD Frank Properties. Under her leadership, they expanded their real estate investments, acquiring prime properties in the Washington state and Arizona. Dana's achievements, multiple, have been celebrated with her properties featured as Seattle Times Home of the Week. In 2016, Dana and her mother and partner, Teresa Frank, graced the cover of Seattle Times, in a story titled Persistence Pays, chronicling their journey as long-term landlords in the Seattle Central District. Dana is deeply involved in philanthropic initiatives, including the annual holiday gift drive for Treehouse for Foster Kids, now in its 15th year. That's impressive. She also serves in leadership roles, co-chairing Bellevue Life Spring, Woodland Park Zoo, and Treehouse 25th Soiree Gala. In addition, she has contributed her expertise as part of the MOPOPS. You'll have to explain that to us what that is. Founders Award Committee. And she is the founder of National Black Family Business Day. So welcome once again to the We podcast.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you. Thank you.
So this is so interesting. As I was looking over all your information and reading about the dynamic things that you're doing, you really have a legacy here within the family that started, was it with your parents or your grandparents?
Started with my parents, and our journey began in 1950. My father was coming of age in Detroit. It was a time of Jim Crow laws and segregation, and my grandfather said, don't rock the boat, take a great job at either Chrysler or Ford. The automobile industry was booming. And my father looked at his friends that were getting up at 3 and 4 in the morning and going in and putting in a double shift and coming home at the end of 2 weeks with barely enough of a paycheck to put a decent meal on the table. And he just said, they call it separate but equal. There's nothing separate but equal about the options that I'm getting. So he was a budding drummer, and he got a van and packed his van with his dreams and his drums and came all the way across the states to Seattle, Washington. And he lied about his age and started playing in nightclubs. And he was talking to a patron one night on the bandstand and during a break. And the guy said, I have a house that I'm going to be looking to sell. And so daddy struck a deal with him, bought the house, and he was at the University of Washington at the time and subdivided. This was long before Airbnb. So he subdivided each of the rooms and rented it out to make the $48 monthly mortgage, and the owner carried the note. And a few years later, he was again on the nightstand and the bandstand. And my mother was a beauty queen in the contest. And she not only won Miss Bronze, she won his heart. And they got together, both had an incredible work ethic, and they bought a property every year for 19 years from 1950 to 1969 without any bank financing because of redlining. And there was no banks that would give loans in Black areas. So I always say that my upbringing was different than most, where parents would pack the station wagon to go to the beach, my parents would knock at my door and say, hey, get up and get on it. And we'd go put pickets on banks or whatever to amplify and expose the injustice. And, you know, people often ask, I mean, because it's like, how could they do this? How could they go? And to this day, we still maintain the properties that my parents started investing back in 1950.
Wow.
And yeah, statistics show that only 30% of family businesses make it to the second generation and merely 12 to the third. So now my adult children are taking over the legacy that their grandparents started. And it's been hard fought, but, you know, well worth it. So
that's amazing, because not only were you dealing, I mean, as I'm hearing you tell this story, there was obviously the prejudice and those issues that you had to deal with. And, you know, the financing and all of that, that some of us middle class white folk, more or less, right, have no idea about. So you had that to fight with, but you also had the building of a business, and you had to take that over from your parents, which is not that you had to, but you did, right? And that is challenging as well, because you've got a family dynamics as well as the changes. There have been so many ups and downs in the housing market over the years. To have been able to continue that growth is really, it's an incredible story.
Well, that's why I was really drawn to wanting to be on your podcast, because it's about women. And, you know, there was a time where my parents divorced after 32 years, and the business really could have just, you know, been taken through, you know, legal fees and the whole nine yards, a receivership. I mean, and then my mom and I partnered, and my mom, bless her, she's 91 now, and she still works with me every day.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, so I just have had such a fortunate female role model to say, you know, we can do this. And, you know, it's been challenging getting loans. And, you know, when we look at statistics that say women make 82 cents on the dollar to men and all of those things we faced, I mean, yeah. It's been a lot of challenges. And, you know, it's the perseverance of just sticking to it.
Yeah. Yeah. As you started to take it over, did you, because before we started to record, I made the comment that I wanted to talk about the female entrepreneurship piece of it and the female entrepreneurial's guide to generational wealth.
Yes.
And that's something that, like, even me, you know, as I'm building the business, I'm thinking, I started building the business years ago. I mean, the whole reason why I named my main business Your Best Mind and not Julie Anderson Enterprises is because I knew one day I'd want to sell, right? I never really have put into my mind creating a generational wealth in my business that I could hand down, or in a portfolio. Like, my husband and I we own our piece that we're on now, but we also have one other piece of property that we invested in. But we've never really looked at it and thought that we want the boys to continue this. We just kind of always said, you know, yeah. When we knock off, they can have the portfolio and do whatever they want. But we never tried to structure it in such a way that it was a business in and of itself that could support them after the fact. So, and I don't think I think a lot more women think like me than they do like you in that case. Is that what you found?
I was just raised so much that, you know, equity grows and cash erodes. And so as I've been building this company, you know, I've always kept the next generation in mind. It's like that saying, you know, plant a tree today, and even though you might not enjoy the shade, your children and their grandchildren will. And that's generally how my mindset is. I look at my kids and I'm like, we'll walk through a building. And in my mind's eye, because my dad's been gone for 27 years, I'm like, you know, there's a story behind each property that they acquired. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it's so amazing to think of the history, and that if my father had taken that job at Chrysler or Ford, we wouldn't be sitting here. And I see the privilege and the opportunities that it has afforded me. And, you know, it's a blessing and really a fortunate situation to work with family, because they're the closest one to you, or hopefully they should be, and you're building for a common cause and a common goal. And so that's nice. I mean, this business has supported my kids getting through college, and you know, our entire lifestyles. That's what it's done.
Yeah, I think real estate has, not necessarily being a real estate agent, but investing in real estate, having that being part of your financial portfolio, is a very wise thing to do because of what you just said earlier, that, you know, equity is always, there may be ups and downs, but 10 years from now, unless there's some major economic shift in the town that you own in and all the companies leave, like you saw in the, you know, in the coal mining areas of the US. But as a general rule, you're always going to, 10 years from now, it's always going to have more equity than what you actually purchased.
I use what I call the REAL acronym for people looking to get into real estate. And I'm like,
first, that's what I was going to ask you. What's your advice on that?
My first thing is just, I call it REAL. So the R is do your research. I mean, I have people that say, oh, well, I want to invest. I live in New York. It's too expensive. How do I get in the game outside of New York? So the first thing is to do your research. And I mean, understand, in Seattle, I bought a building 22 years ago, and I purchased it because a light rail was coming in, and I knew the vibrancy that was going to happen in that community. And sure enough, it's been one of my best investments. So the research is so important, and I know it's hard to invest out of state. I mean, I personally like to be able to drive to my properties, and most of my buildings are within a 20-minute drive. So the research is really important. The second thing is expanding your network. I always say my network is my net worth. And that's how I saw that my parents were able to make that happen. I mean, in the early days, they got loans with established business owners, such as, you know, people that own the Carpet Exchange or Sandpoint Builders Hardware. They were bankable when my parents weren't. And then my parents would do the management and handle all the manual labor. And then when the property escalated in value, they'd refinance, buy their partners out, and then roll into the next property. And the A is amplify your story. Today, to this day, there is still redlining. And that's why you see things like Chase Bank has offered $30 billion to bridge the racial financial wealth gap. I mean, there's so many opportunities that particularly marginalized and Black communities don't know about, that banks have these programs available. And I remember I referenced my parents' divorce, but when my parents divorced, a receiver had taken over our properties. And when they came back to us, they were really in disrepair. And it would have been easy just to sell, as several bankers told me, just sell and, you know, go on about your business. But we held on because I went to a bank and I said, look, I need a moratorium. I need to cease payments for 12 months. Let me use the rental income to refurbish, get back a standard quality of a resident, tack the mortgage on to the end of the loan. And the banker was willing to do that. And most people don't even know that that's an option.
I didn't know about that. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I had 12 months worth of income where I refurbished the properties, and then I was able to, you know, I'm back in the game. And then that's the L of my REAL acronym is leverage. Leverage your relationships, leverage the bank, bring your bankers to lunch. Don't be afraid to go out and talk to them. And, you know, once you have that in alignment, it's really streamlined.
You feel that last piece is still like, it's funny that you say that, because my father-in-law, he, for years, they lived in a smaller town in North Carolina, and he ran a couple of businesses. He had a storefront, a yogurt shop, and he had a few things going on. And he was of the time, that era, I would say the 70s, maybe, you know, the 60s, the 70s, maybe into the 80s to a certain extent, you knew your banker, and there were still a lot of transactions that were sealed with a handshake. Right. And now everything is so litigious, right? Everything has to have, you know, an amendment and an addendum and a 5 signatures and all of that.
Sure.
Do you find that still having that or developing that relationship even now in 2000, moving into 2024, developing a relationship with a banker is a good thing, is beneficial?
More than ever. A lady I know named Emily Flitter wrote a book called White Wall. And it is primarily talking about for minorities looking for loans, how, you know, they gave an example of this former NFL superstar, Jimmy Kennedy, and he was declined private client status at Chase Bank because then they taped it. The banker said, "We don't bank with people that look like you." And I mean, this guy had seven figures. And this is now, this happened like 2 years ago. It's a huge article in the New York Times. And, you know, once this exposure happened, you know, Chase Bank had to say, we're going to, you know, do something to, you know, change this narrative. So right now, more than ever, I think when someone tells you no, you need to get to the why. And that just happens by amplifying your voice. I don't accept no. I mean, if I go and I'm asking for a loan and I know I've got equity in the property or whatever the situation is, tell me why. So, you know, as a woman, as a Black woman, you know, I have to fight twice as hard. So, yes, I definitely say take the bankers out to lunch, take them on tours, show them what you're thinking about doing. And, you know, they have to have a really good reason for declining you.
That's great advice, because that's something that, like, these are just little things that, and this is one of the reasons why individuals are good to follow people like you or seek out coaches or consultants that have been there, done that, right? Because we don't always think about these things. We don't always think we don't know what we don't know, right? And if we've never.
So true. And I just say that, you know, as particularly as women, we're either building for someone else or we're building for ourselves. And so if I'm going to work that hard, I'd rather be building for myself.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And of course, building that legacy, thinking generational wealth. So let's talk about that for a minute. Women entrepreneurs that may be listening to this, or even women in the C-suite or, you know, data entry or whatever, doing whatever job they're doing, how can they think about going, I want to build some kind of a legacy for my children? Like, what, there's got to be a huge mindset shift that takes place. It's almost like when I'm coaching with entrepreneurs, I will tell them as a female entrepreneur, stop thinking as a worker and start thinking like a CEO. You don't want to be a big business. I understand that. You don't want to, you know, be Amazon, but you want to be the CEO. And that's a different mindset than the worker bee mindset.
Absolutely.
So it's got to be that same shift for going from just thinking about building wealth for yourself versus building something that can be generational. Julie,
I was 25, it was 1989, and on the way to the courthouse, I'm listening to Janet Jackson's Control. And I love that song. And I get to the courthouse and I see the back of my father's head, and he looks so handsome. He's wearing his long camel hair coat. And I take a seat next to my mother, and my father turns his head, and our eyes meet. And he's like, "You just can't take that knife out my back." And my mom looks at me and she says, "Don't let him bite." And I'm like, at this time, my father's health had failed. He had heart failure, kidney failure. Mm-hmm. And I said, he said he's got one foot on the banana peel, another on the grave, and he's going to take it all with him. And my mother said, he did not create this by himself, and it's not all his to take. And I mean, it was the most frightening time, because from the time I was born, I was told, you're not working for me or anybody else. You're working for yourself. And it was like, everything was on the line. And so I had to look at that. I hadn't had children at the time, but I'd always been born and raised with the mindset of legacy and, you know, that we're building for the whole and for the next generation. So it was really a tough time when I had to come to terms with that and think, what am I going to do? If this goes away, what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. And you know, we persevered, my mom and I, and, you know, it was tough. I mean, there were times when we joke and say, you know, lean times, lean cuisine. That was a splurge, you know, but we came through. And now when I look back on that journey, and I've got two adult children, and I've trained them, I think it's so early, it's so important to start the process early. I mean, my kids knew from an early age. They lost their father when my daughter was 15 and my son was 22. And so I spent many years as a single mom, and, you know, they came with me. I mean, I remember coming, even when my son was a newborn, taking him swaddled in his blanket from the hospital, going to show an apartment, you know what I mean? He was in his car seat. You know, so it's been instilled in them from childhood. You know, I'm like, if you drive by, check on the properties. If you see trash, get out and pick it up. I mean, this is how we eat. And so it's something that they've learned. They are far from trust fund babies, and, you know, they earn it. And I think that's the biggest advice I can give to parents is that you want to start training them early. Graham Greene, a famous poet, once said, there's a moment in every child's life when the door opens and lets the future in. And for me, I think that that moment should come real early. I think that children should learn early on the responsibility because the world is tough. And if you're fortunate enough to have a legacy business, then you should be a part of working and earning it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with the teaching them early. And I think for women who are listening, it doesn't necessarily, even if you don't have a business that's a legacy business or something to hand down, you can still teach those same principles.
Yes.
At that early age, right?
Absolutely.
We have, my husband and I are proud parents of three boys. They're all in their 30s now, all married, and they have developed their own reputation within the sphere that their friends and their and the people who hire them to work of being good, hard physical workers. And that I know goes back to when they were, you know, knee high to a grasshopper, and we would go out in the mountains and cut our firewood.
That's
and
right.
No matter what, even when the little one was barely walking, it was like, here, carry this stick to the truck. Like, they learn that. And of course, they'll tell you that, you know, they had to stack wood every day in the snow. But
oh, yes, of course.
But it did. It taught them good ethics. And I think that's one of those things that is sadly missing now. So if you're a parent, no matter what your business is, whether or not you can, you know, pass it on, it's
your children are watching, you know, it's like a poem, children live what they learn. And, you know, for me, you know, we do a lot of philanthropic work in this house. I mean, last week we hosted a party here for 125 people, and it was all to raise gifts for Treehouse for Foster Kids. And all of my guests that came had to bring an unwrapped gift for a kid in foster care. And my daughter was a bartender. My son was, you know, helping clean. And I mean, they've learned that early on, how important it is to give back.
And that's a legacy.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
That's a legacy.
And I appreciate so much you saying that, because that's what I talk about. When I talk about generational wealth, it's not just financial. I mean, it's the wealth of a lifestyle. It's the wealth of a mindset. It's the wealth of a way of thinking, of how you treat people, having compassion and lifting others up.
Yeah. That's beautiful. That's the best kind of a legacy. Now, you mentioned something earlier. You said it was, you remember when you were young, being woken up early, and your mother or your father, I can't remember which, would say, get up and get on it.
Yeah.
Right? Now that is
the title of my book.
The title of your book.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about the book.
It's really a business memoir of, you know, our journey of how, you know, we started off, and I call them fire starters. And those are people who, no matter what your birth circumstance dictates, you can change the narrative. And you're a fire starter, and you go out there like my parents. That my grandmother on my mother's side was a lifelong domestic. My grandfather was a carpenter. They raised 8 incredible, accomplished children out of a little 2-bedroom house. And it's like, how do you change the narrative? And my father had lost his mother when he was only 17. His father, as I said earlier, was like, don't ruffle any feathers. And, you know, they set out, and despite all of the obstacles set against them, they forged ahead. And so that's what the book is really about. It's just, it shares our journey, the hard times, the hysterical stories that have happened to my mother and I over the years is housing providers, and, you know, just helping people understand and get tools on how they can get into real estate if that's what they're interested in. But it's also universal tools for whatever entrepreneurial interests they might have.
That's great. Yeah, because a lot of the principles, right, a lot of the business principles, you know, can go from industry to industry. It's a lot of it's up here.
Yes.
A lot of it's your determination and your mindset. I love that. I love that. Now, if that, because I'm interested in it, is it out, or is it
available on Amazon for pre-order? And we have timed it. The actual book will be in hand on Juneteenth. So June 18th for Juneteenth holiday.
Well, that's good timing. That's good timing. I love it. I love it. Well, if you were to give, because we're getting close to our little 30-minute mark there, if you were to give women out there, especially women of color, who are going, I mean, obviously the lesson would, or the advice would be for all of us. But for those who may have extra challenges, either it's because of their skin color, or it's because of their upbringing, or maybe trauma or something, like if they're stuck, or they're wanting to break free of, or get through that difficult journey with a greater amount of ease, what would be a piece of advice you'd give them?
First of all, I think about things that my father taught me. And one of the funny ones was, you know, just because it's on your ass doesn't make it an asset. We all like nice things. Those things can wait. So I always say to, especially young people starting out, you know, they see all the pretty items and they want them now. And things will happen with time. And so my advice is to, you know, really think about the real acronym, do your research, amplify, you know, expand your network, leverage. Those are such important steps. And just remember that the amount of time that you spend working, you can put as much into yourself and, you know, the payoff will be even better.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I like that. Just because it's on your ass doesn't mean it's an asset.
Yeah, a lot.
You don't
of
always need those designer clothes.
That's right.
Oh, I love it so much. This has been a delightful conversation, Dana. Thank you for being on the Women Entrepreneur Show. And I'm looking forward. I'm going to go pre-order that book myself because I can tell there'll be a lot of great stories, but a lot of wisdom that's shared in that. So thank you.
One other thing I'll say about the book is I got Damon John from Shark Tank. He wrote the intro. And so from a perspective of someone that started with nothing and turned a company into a $6 billion company, I mean, it's good to have big dreams.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. That's great to know. And for any of the listeners, whether you're watching this live right now or you are watching it later or listening to it later, all of the contact information on how to stay in touch with Dana, how to pre-order that book, the link will be there in the show notes. She also has a social media presence. So she's got a LinkedIn profile, which that has some letters and numbers behind it. So we'll put that up on the show page. And Twitter, I like this. Oh, we didn't even get to the at Menopause Barbie conversations. And that's with your sister?
Yes, my sister lives in Germany. And about 15 years ago, we just started a fun blog called Menopause Barbies because our motto is we're getting older, but we're still dolls.
I love that is awesome. So that's Twitter. On Instagram, you're Dana Frank Adventures, and you have a presence on Facebook as well. So we'll put all of those ways to stay connected to you, Dana, in the show, as well as your website. So thank you so much for being
Julie.
Here. It was delightful, and we appreciate the. I'm looking forward to reading your wisdom. So
I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Absolutely. And as we wrap up the show, as you notice, we're under our new banner, Women Excelling Everywhere. If you want more information about our private membership community, then be sure and send us an email at info@womenexcellingeverywhere.com, as well as you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook, all of those different places, because we would love to stay connected with you. We are all about supporting women everywhere, and that's what our membership community is. It is the We Success Collective. So if you want to be a part of that, then certainly let us know, and we'll always put those links in the show page as well. And as we wrap up this episode, we would like to have everybody just take a nice deep breath. You know the drill. If you listen to me often, take a deep breath, go out there and simply enjoy every moment. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.